League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Texans lose yesterday, 31-0. Do not be scared, though. Christmas is on the horizon. Santa's going to bring the Texans everything that they want. We've been doing the 12 days for a Texans Christmas. And so far, I think we have a pretty good list that we put together. Day one, franchise quarterback. Second day of Texans Christmas, legal resolution in the Deshaun Watson saga. Third day of Texans Christmas, little Jack Easterby must go. So now we're on our fourth day of Texans Christmas. And if you've been paying attention, our order is Brendan, me, Joel. So Brendan has the fourth day of Texans Christmas.
Look, what I really need for Texans Christmas is them to lose specifically both of these next two games. Because the Seahawks are bad. And I know how bad the Texans are, but it is a game they can steal. And, of course, like, you guys have been embraced the sucks since day one. But what I would tell you is right now, and this can change, I think the top two in the draft are almost interchangeable. And so, for one, I want the Texans to have an option to take one of those two guys. But two, I kind of think number two might be the most appealing pick for someone to trade up should the draft continue to look this way. Because you kind of have two guys who are both worth number one. And if the Texans lose these next two games, there's no way they're picking worse than second.
All right, so fourth day of Texans Christmas, lose the next two games. Home game against Seattle, which I believe that's a winnable game. It's hard to say that after you lose 31-0 yesterday and Seattle beat San Francisco.
Last time I checked, they still have Russell Wilson?
They still have Russell Wilson, okay. Yeah.
DK Metcalf's not hurt?
He's checking. He's healthy, I think. Just checking. Tyler Lockett looked very good yesterday. They faked a punt.
Oh.
Homer was outstanding on that fake punt. He had like 70-something yards in the game. Seattle's a different team away, though. Seattle at home and Seattle away, two totally different teams. So if this game was in Seattle, 0% chance, absolutely no way that the Houston Texans would beat Seattle. I'll give the Texans maybe a 5% chance that they could beat Seattle at home coming up on Sunday?
5% more than I'm giving them.
You give them 0% chance?
Zero. We got everything going off the field that's a distraction. You got everything
like
on the field that you have. Every week it's a new suspension.
I don't think it's a distraction, though.
I think it's negative attention driving content across the board, if you can call it whatever you want, distraction or not. Maybe they're not distracted by it, but the whole rest of the fan base is going, what the hell is going on around here? You got two quarterbacks, one as inept as the other. No one can run the offense. You can't get the ball across midfield for a majority of the game and get into the opponent's territory on your way to getting your doors blown off 31-0. And you want me to give them a chance against a team that just beat the San Francisco 49ers who needed to win to stay in the playoff race?
I mean, they're still in the playoff
race. They're like seventh out of seven, but yeah, okay. That would have been a huge win for them.
It was a big game. It was not a must-win, though, for San Fran.
They still beat a playoff, potentially a playoff team, as opposed to what you just did to a playoff team. You just basically bowed down and said, hit me harder.
Texans are 7.5-point dogs against Seattle next Sunday.
But, guys, I need them to lose both. I want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah, I heard you.
Kind of went on
you can't lose both if you don't lose the first one.
And the one that's the following week is the big one, right? That's the one where you head to Jacksonville. And Jacksonville's currently ahead of you in the draft order, some tiebreaker thing. Like, where the Texans are eliminated from the playoffs, Jacksonville's not, even though they have the same record.
Tiebreaker is you beat them.
Well, yeah, I guess that's right. But the Jags aren't eliminated from the playoff contention yet. So the Texans are the first team in the NFL that have been eliminated from playoff contention. They have a 2-10 record.
Weren't the Lions already eliminated prior to the Texans? No?
Nope, they're not eliminated. They still have an outside chance, if you want to call it an outside chance. Texans are the only team eliminated. Even though Jacksonville's 2-10, you're 2-10, the Texans are the only team with the E next to their name. But Seattle, look, you want to lose that game. You want to lose the rest of the games. But the next two are critically important because you have Seattle this week. And then you force, if Jacksonville loses as well, perhaps the biggest game of the season for the Houston Texans. Like, you have some serious implications on the line in 2 weeks when the Houston Texans head to Jacksonville to face the Jaguars.
Are you not starting at quarterback for the Texans to assure that they do the right thing? When it gets,
you know,
down
what they're going to do. They're always going to play their best players to try to give themselves the best chance to win. They've tried. They've done that all season long, with the exceptions of suspensions.
When do they start listening on a daily basis to understand what embrace the suck means? It doesn't mean that we're throwing egg all over their face and just completely bashing them. We're telling them, in order to get better quicker,
well, we do that too.
Just buy in what we have to because we call it like we see it. But at the same time, this is what they need to do. And you know what? We've seen the Spurs do this when they got Tim Duncan. There's ways to fake it before you make it and still get people to believe you are really trying to win the football game. But at the end of the day, you know in your heart of hearts you're not.
I think that they
are. You're just being more savvy about it. Davis Mills should have been starting this entire year once Tyrod Taylor went down.
But does he give you a better chance to win?
No.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're trying to win.
Right. They got to change that mentality. It's absolutely ridiculous. That's why
I'm not sure they have to. Like, they're already so bad. Like, they're so bad, I don't even think they need to try.
Okay. Who was the quarterback that led them to victory against the Jags?
It was Tyrod.
There's a chance
he
could do it again.
He's a quarterback now, though.
There's a chance he could do it again. There's absolutely zero chance Davis Mills could do that.
I would agree with that. And Davis Mills is expected to start at least this week. The wrist injuries, apparently.
I think
Tyrod
Taylor's Adrian Peterson from the Seahawks after they stop in this week, and he can play running back the rest of the year. That gives them a better chance to lose.
If they sign Adrian Peterson?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to give them every chance to say, hey, we're getting it. We're going out and signing players.
That might be an
upgrade.
He's
a former All-Pro. Over Burkhead?
Yeah, that's the question.
Well,
Peterson
they can't
or
run
Burkhead?
The football anyway. So.
I think it's about a wash, to
so
be honest
would that
with you.
Be, that wouldn't be the equivalent of Cam coming home to Carolina, but you take a guy that lives here that everybody claims as a Houstonian, yeah. Bring Adrian Peterson back. At least that's some positive mojo on the off-the-field side that may help on the field, but at least it's a positive story after all the negativity the last few weeks. Because, oh my God, this is it's just every week it's like, what's it going to be next? That's not how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be faking it, but in a believable fashion so that people think, look, they just don't have a good roster this year, but they're trying to win. Right now, no matter what they do, they're trying to feed you some line of crap that every time anyone listens to it, whether in their car, watching the news, or listening to us, and you go, come on, man, what kind of fools do they think we are?
I don't really understand what you're saying.
I'm tired of them trying to convince us and then the actions say something totally different about the fact they keep saying they're trying to win football games. There's no way they can try and win, but at the end of the day, they should be starting Davis Mills.
So you don't think they're trying to win on Sundays?
I don't.
Really? So you think that's an intentional tank?
Nick Caserio's not trying to win on Sundays. I think that
Caserio's not.
No,
David Culley,
no.
I believe.
But
is.
Again, I think David Culley's really a puppet for Nick Caserio.
I can't disagree.
So that's why I'm saying that. I'm saying that eventually the memo is going to get completely across to the coaching staff in the locker room, as opposed to just, because I'll tell you this, Jeremy, the other thing that's really noticeable to me is how many guys have already quit on this team. And we talked about it early on with Lonnie Johnson and Justin Reed just deciding as a business decision, I'm not sticking my head in there.
Right.
Watching that offensive line, watching some of the plays, like, you know, after first contact and stuff, seeing guys just pulling up going, yeah, no, I'm not. I'm done. That's what really bothers me. Like, at a certain point, whether the memo's been sent or not, the players have already just decided to fold up their tents and realize we're just trying to stay healthy.
Yeah, I think that there's some players that are probably there. Just the dog days, it's the stretch, you're just seeing it through. There's some other players that I think you're seeing effort
from. You
think
from. There's a 5% chance they beat the Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean, it's the NFL. Absolutely. I mean, they've won two games this year. They've won two out of 12.
The Titans game, obviously, but that was even earlier in the season when at least guys were still trying to give effort. That's the kind of point I'm making, too, is the fact that you've got so many guys that have so little buy-in right now.
I would agree with that. But, I mean, they're playing guys that they think they get buy-in from. I mean, Grugier Hill had the 19 tackles yesterday.
Sure.
Burkhead's going to try Davis Mills will be auditioning, so he's going to try. I mean, 5% is not much, but it's the NFL. Crazy things happen. I mean, you look around the NFL and you have crazy games that happen each and every week. One of the other things that Brendan had to say about lose the next two games, because he thinks the second pick may be more appealing than the number one pick, because you feel like Hutchinson and Thibodeau are, you know, one of the same, right? Like 1A, 1B, when you look at the top of the draft, it looks like those will be the top two guys to go. But the second pick might be more appealing to trade for, because the second pick might not have as much of a king's ransom as the number one pick. You think that's true?
I think it's very true, and I think the other thing is that there are going to be other teams that, whether they want the second defensive end on the board or they want the first corner or the first offensive lineman, are going to want to get ahead of everybody else so that they have their pick, so that they're not having to finagle picks quickly while someone on the team is on the clock because they know someone else is hot after who they want, that I think they would get a multitude of calls, not just because of everybody wanting, you know, whoever doesn't get picked first at a defensive line spot. For pass rushers, I think you'll have other teams calling saying, I got to move up. The ultimate position for us to move up, because we know we have to move up anyway, is to make sure that we get everybody else out of the process. We get exactly who we want at pick two or three.
Yeah. To ensure a top two spot, to assure a top two spot, lose the next 2 weeks, really a top. You lose to Jacksonville. Now you even up the tiebreaker. Lose the next 2 weeks, our fourth day of Texans Christmas. Stay tuned for the rest. 12 days, of course. 713-780-ESPN. What's your wish list? Wish list for the Houston Texans this offseason. 713-780-3776. Yesterday, you might have seen a viral video of a Houston Texans fan that was standing in front of the suite of Cal McNair holding a sign that said, "Hey, Tommy Boy Cal, sell the team. Hey, Cal, the fans care. Do you care?" Little Ronsta on Twitter. Ronnie. He'll join us next. He is that fan. He's on the Killer Bees when we return on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it now.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You don't care, you loser! You loser! We care, do you? You don't care! You don't care! We care! We care! No, we care.
That was Ronnie B., Houston Texans fan. You can find him on Twitter at RonnieB832. He went viral yesterday. Couple of signs that he had in front of Cal McNair's suite. Hey, Tommy Boy Cal, sell the team. Hey, Cal, the fans care. Do you care? Well, he's joining us now on the HRMP guest line. Ronnie, thanks for coming in. What inspired you to put together those two signs?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Just the frustration for the past 3 years, ever since Cal has taken over this franchise. It's just built up and built up, and I've been voicing my frustrations since right before Bill O'Brien was fired. I've brought flags to say, fire Bill O'Brien. Same thing with Easterby last year. And then nothing's changing. He keeps Easterby employed, brings in Caserio, saying it's not the Patriot way, Patriot South. It is. So it's trying to be Patriot South down here, and I've had enough. So I had to finally get out of my seat and walk up to where he sits. That way he could hear me and hear my frustration.
Now, I want to preface this by saying, right, I love everything that you're doing. And I think that the biggest thing is from inquiring minds want to know, to put it in just one quick way. Like, we know the signs you've had. You mentioned the O'Brien sign, but we know the one last year about fire Easterby. And then this one. Do they know and look for you? Do they? And what are the punishments going through? Like, because I'm thinking to myself, you paid for your ticket. You didn't have any cuss words or offensive language on your signs. I can see taking the sign away. The Astros had sign-stealing signs all over the league. They just took the signs away. But based on what I saw on Twitter, they kicked you out with a cop?
The cop just escorted me out and told me I needed to get out of the section. And then, so I just went back down. But I get...
I think we lost Ronnie.
No, we didn't lose Ronnie. Ronnie, start Ronnie, we lost you. Start that again.
Oh, no worries. You got me?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. So last year and this year, for every game, I've had security called on me for holding up my signs, saying that they're too big and they're not in taste of the game. And I go, well, there's a guy at section over to the right that has a Texans flag that says Go Texans the same size. So what are we doing here? I don't have any cuss words. I'm only getting up during timeouts. What's the big deal? I had videos of security last year surrounding me, trying to kick me off for my Easterby sign. And I've never been kicked out of a game. They just come down to confront me, and I'm like, I pull up the rules. I go, there's no rule saying I can't have this, as long as it's not offensive. So nothing has happened to where they've kicked me out. They just have come down multiple times in a game.
Do they take the sign from you?
Do what?
Do they take the sign away from you?
Nope. Actually, they tried to last game. A security guy tried to grab it for me, and I told him, you can't touch my stuff. But then he dropped it after the cops came to talk to me. And then the cops were like, we got called down here for this sign. This is ridiculous. Let's just go back up. And they didn't do anything. They left me alone. So I'll continue to bring them. I'm a 12-year season ticket holder. So I'm just frustrated like everyone else is. And I guess if I have to be the voice of a bunch of people that sit around me in my section, I'm going to do it. I've had enough. But after getting blown out yesterday, I was like, all right, fourth quarter, we're going up so we can hear me. So that's what we did.
Ronnie B., who had the Texans, had the signs yesterday to fire Jack Easterby in the past. He had that in Indy. He was in front of Cal Sweet. Said, hey, Tommy boy, Cal, sell the team. Hey, Cal, the fans care. Do you care? He's joining us now on the HRNP guest line. Ronnie, I think you're kind of a microcosm of the city. Whenever it comes to Houston Texans fans, that, you know, they have the same feelings that you do. Perhaps they don't have the bravado to stand in front of Cal Sweet with signs saying sell the team like you do. But I'm curious, too. Like, you're one of the few still going to the games, which I admire. Like, you're not a bandwagon fan. You're still very much there. Whereas a lot of fans have kind of quit on this team, not showing up, capacity at an all-time low, interest at an all-time low. I'm curious, you, the microcosm of the fan base, like, what is it going to take to change your mind about this organization?
Man, first thing would be just to get rid of Easterby. Like, when you got rid of O'Brien, he should have gone as well. Just do something small. Stop lying to us. Talk to us. We don't ever hear from him. He reads from a teleprompter when he's staring into camera. And it's just everything he says, we don't believe. Like, when his dad was running the team, there was at least hope that, okay, yeah, we can make the playoffs. Maybe something amazing will happen. One game away from AFC Championship game, there's hope. Maybe the next season will even be better. Now, with Cal running everything and Easterby and Casario, there's no hope. I don't think even if we get a top one or two pick in the draft, that we're going to pick the right guys. There's just no hope, and it sucks because I've spent all this money, and then I get yelled at from other people saying, I can't believe you still go. Why are you supporting him? You're just putting money in his pocket. I go, he's getting money from the TV deals no matter what. So us, it's just a tiny little bit that he would miss out on. So what you need to do is, like I did yesterday, we need more people to stand up and show that, hey, we care, and to protest a little bit, not just outside of a stadium, but just go in, more signs, more banners, to let him know how we feel, because it's frustrating.
Ronnie, I'm curious, you don't get any notifications in the off season from the team that says, hey, we've seen this across sports. When season ticket holders act up, whether it's, you know, towards the players or otherwise, at a certain point they say, you're revoking your season tickets, we're doing things like that. Have the Texans contacted you any way like that?
No, I've never gotten a message from anybody saying anything like that. The cops did ask me yesterday if I had season tickets, and I told them no, just in case. Mm-hmm. But I said, no, I don't. They're like, all right, just get out here. But it would suck if they tried to do that, but then that would actually look pretty bad on them if they tried to pull that, because I'm not cussing at them. I'm not doing anything, extremely wrong or bad. I'm just voicing my frustration. And I think everyone's just finally fed up, and it's time for us to be heard. And I was like, I don't think he's ever going to sell a team. Why would you sell a team, when you're just making millions and millions of dollars every year? I get that. But that's how I feel, and that's how a bunch of people feel. Like, if you're not going to put any effort, what are you doing? What's the point?
We want
this team to win.
Ronnie, I love it. I love the signs. I love that you're being vocal about it. I love the fact that you're still going. I know it's really easy not to. But a Houston Texan fan, hey, stay a Houston Texan fan, but call for the change. And look, know, you're not cussing. You're not saying anything racial, not doing anything like that. I'm happy that you weren't kicked out of the stadium, which I thought that you were. So that's awesome. I hope more people do what you do. And thanks for spending a few minutes with us, Ronnie.
Hey, guys. No problem. Y'all have a good one.
It's Ronnie B., the Texans fan who went viral at NRG Stadium yesterday.
Tommy Boy reference as well in the sign.
Yeah. That was great. I mean, he had one in the past, too, in Indy where it said, fire Easterby. Deshaun Watson came up to him, was advocating for Easterby, like, hey, please put that away. To me, it's being very sensitive. Like, if you got kicked out of the stadium for having those signs.
Yeah, you and I were talking about
like,
during
come
the break.
On, man.
I mean, in my experiences, the organization has certain tickets on reserve for any kind of issues like this where it's just a relocation thing. And then the curiosity of it's your property coming in. Do they have the right to confiscate your property? In most cases, I think, in my experiences, they would say, we're going to hold the sign for you till after the game. You can have it back. But you can't really take the sign from them. But like I said, I mean, it's interesting from a lot of different aspects. But we saw with the whole thing about, you know, where they were picketing in the offseason about Deshaun and picketing around. Nothing says more than during games. There's a ton of cameras. There's the local media. We saw how quickly it got to social media yesterday. But if it starts building to where it's not just Ronnie, where it's, you know, someone in every section or majority of sections, and then it starts to be kind of like a whole fan group that gets together and says, every game we're going to do this and let's do that, maybe you can start to make a difference.
See, I like the passionate fan. I really do. And look, I get the, well, let's affect the bottom line of Cal. Let's not show up. Let's have 50% capacity inside the 65,000-seat stadium. I think that does send a message. But this also sends a message, too. You know, you have a lifelong fan who's a season ticket holder that wants good football in the city of Houston. Who doesn't? Like, the NFL is awesome.
Right.
Let's be honest. The NFL is great. You want to see your local football team do good things.
Sure.
And whenever you're frustrated with the ownership, you're frustrated with the decisions that have been made, this is the kind of stuff I love to see. Like, I want to see folks with paper bags on their head. I want to see more signs like Ronnie at NRG Stadium. Be passionate about your team. But if you're not happy, be vocal.
I mean, the one question that I had was, you know, the other way to affect him is because he's still affecting their bottom line. And I know he said that, you know, every owner's still going to get money because of the TV revenues. But look, the extra revenue on those home games and all the money that they pull and all the merchandise that they sell and all the different ways that they profit by game days having a full house to capacity, you can affect it that way too. And I love what he's doing if he's doing it just to send the message. But as long as he's still a season ticket holder and he's spending his money to support this team and there's many others like him, it's not truly having the effect. Now, I do think this year, because of all the empties we're seeing, because of the fact that they no longer have a waiting list, because of the fact that we see people are saying, I'm actually going to take action instead of just saying I'm done with this team, that I think it's made somewhat of a dent in the brain of Cal McNair and the front office over there. I just don't know how big of a dent it is.
Eric in Jersey Village saying, this guy's a true fan. He cares. Good for him. Keep it going. What would your sign be? If you had a sign that you could put in the face of Cal McNair, what would it be? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll read some of the best ones. Also, when we come back and go around the NFL, boy, the Detroit Lions did the Texans a favor yesterday. Can they keep it up? That and more next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Get into the Christmas spirit during our 12 Days of Giving, sponsored by Veritex Community Bank. On the first day, we'd like to give back to Star of Hope, a Christ-centered community dedicated to meeting the needs of homeless men, women, and their children. We're encouraging you, our wonderful listeners, to head to ESPN.com/12Days to give what you can. Plus, David Gao, CEO of Gao Media, has generously agreed to match donations to each charity for up to $500. So head to ESPN975.com/12Days to make your donation to Star of Hope now. No donation will go unnoticed. So please help out with that if you can. Let's go around the NFL. Mike Vrabel had a bye week. Didn't the open week. Sorry, Charlie Palillo. But didn't keep him from bashing some officials. He was watching Sunday Night Football yesterday like the rest of us, and Denver and Kansas City were playing, as we know. Travis Kelce had a part of the game where he caught the ball. As he was tucking it, took a step or two. As he was tucking it, had the ball knocked out of his hands. went to a replay where they, I think they confirmed that it was an incomplete pass, called incomplete on the field, and confirmed it was an incomplete pass. Mike Vrabel then tweeted the rules at the NFL officiating Twitter, which the NFL officiating Twitter sometimes during games, like they'll put the highlight of the play and then talk about the ruling and the rule, et cetera, et cetera. Mike Vrabel sent them a screenshot of the rule disagreeing with this play that NFL officiating said was not a catch.
Hopefully he's got a slush fund to cover the fine he's probably going to get, but I love him doing this. I just am afraid that, as most leagues are, they're hypersensitive, and the only reason why they have those Twitter accounts for NBA officials and NFL officials is so that they can tell you even and reinforce the fact they were right, you were wrong. And I've told you my experiences in the NBA going through some of this. But good for Mike Vrabel for being able to call him out and say, look, across the league, we've noticed it on a week-by-week basis. The inconsistencies and just the inability to get calls right by the officiating in the NFL has been blatant this year.
To me, it was stupid that Mike Vrabel would do this, to be honest with you. Because officials, they are going to see this, and why even do it in a game that you're not involved in? So now you have, there's a little bit of doubt how officials are going to treat you going forward. I also don't think it was a catch. I also think it was incomplete. I think Mike Vrabel is wrong. Like, in my opinion, Kelsey does not complete the tuck before the ball is knocked out of his hands. Like, I feel like the officials got it right, and Mike Vrabel got it wrong.
I mean, you're the guy that loves drama. I love drama. That's why I love him tweeting.
I just don't understand why he would do it. I love it from, like, the storyline perspective.
You know why he does, though, Jeremy? Because let's go back. We don't watch Titans games week in, week out. But I guarantee you that there's been a couple of instances this year that have stuck in Mike Vrabel's craw about the officiating. And this was his way of being able to send a message.
To me, it's so stupid.
You know what? Look, it's the human element. Referees, like you said, they're going to pay attention to it. You don't think that the next time there's going to be a 50-50 call they could or couldn't make,
exactly,
if it's against the Titans, they'll throw it. I told you when I was with the Rockets how they charted every single referee and their calls against and for the team, and they knew who held grudges, and then we knew it further than that in discussions. Yeah, believe me, he's going to pay the price for it.
You know what I would like from those officiating Twitter accounts, by the way, every now and then? If they admit that they were wrong. Like,
yeah, no doubt.
This one was wrong.
No question.
Then you can start taking it a little bit more seriously. Like, if you tweet out ones where they're incorrect, like, say it. And then the correct ones, say it. Like, I think that'd be awesome. And, like, look, our bad. We're not always going to be right. Just own it sometimes.
Multiple times, the official in the booth on these broadcasts lately, including the U of H game and with the linebacker on fourth down with the interference call, but in a couple of cases in the NFL, too, where Aikman's game last week where he went to the booth and the former official was like, yeah, I don't think any way, in shape, or form they should have thrown a flag there. That's what I want to hear from the actual governing body.
Yeah, give me that. Detroit yesterday, finally, they get their victory. Here's how it sounded on 97.1 The Ticket.
4 seconds to go. They can win it with a touchdown. First victory of the year on the line. Goff's got it. Back, looks, throws, and
yes!
Caught! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! They did it! Amon-Ra St. Brown on the receiving end! Oh, they're rushing the field! They've done it! 3 zeros on the clock! This game is over! It's over! Jared Goff to Amon-Ra St. Brown, his first career touchdown. And how big is that? Oh, my goodness. Have a day, boys. Have a day.
A little squeakage there in the middle. That's all right. Grade the call. Grade the call. Lions win by two.
Is that a solo, or has he got a color analyst?
I'm sure he's got a color analyst.
I would like to at least heard the color analyst at some point, but I'd say call itself. That's one of the better ones we've heard in terms of raw emotion, and except for the one little slippage with the voice, I'd give it borderline 8.5, nine.
I'm going nine. I'm going nine. How about the other end of it? You want to hear the Vikings end of it?
Oh, boy.
Here it was on KFAN.
Here it is with 4 seconds to go in the game, 27-23 Vikings. Jared Goff, three receivers left, one right. He goes out of the shotgun. He takes the snap from Evan Brown. He's going to fire to the end zone. It's caught. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. And these cardiac kiddies have beaten the Minnesota Vikings and won a game for the first time in 364 days. The game-winning touchdown was caught by Amon-Ra St. Brown. And for that young man, his first National Football League touchdown is a memorable one. It beat the Minnesota Vikings 29-27.
Carried the call.
Five.
I'm giving it a 10.
I like that he got all the information there. I wanted to hear more raw emotion of how bummed out you were. That's why, look, I think from a, like from an informative standpoint, if someone doesn't have a TV in front of them, he gave you everything you could have possibly asked for. I just want some of that. If that's the home broadcast of the team that just lost to the worst team in football, I would like some raw emotion.
You want more sadness there, huh?
Yeah.
You're looking at it from an entertainment point of view, which is fine. Yeah. After the game, Dan Campbell gave the ball to the Oxford community. They had a tough week with the school shooting. I thought that was really cool. Dan Campbell, by the way, I like that guy.
I like him
way more than David Culley. Like, if you're going to fail and eventually fire a coach in 2 to 3 years, I wish we had Campbell and not Culley.
I was going to say the exact same thing. If the Texans had a guy that you would never question who's making the disciplinary decisions and who's the tough guy in the locker room that's going to tell you my way or the highway, and you feel like you can back that guy, he's that guy.
Yeah.
I the whole biting of the kneecaps might be a little bit too much for me, but the fact that it's easy to root for that guy, except for the fact he's in the NFC North and I don't want him to win games or win the division. But
I don't think
that,
you have to worry about the line.
But I still really like the way he goes about his business on a daily basis.
Detroit, by the way, first win, obviously. Texans currently one game behind Detroit in the win column. You look at the rest of the Lions schedule, because immediately I'm like, hope for 1-1 for the Houston Texans. Detroit, rest of the way, their final five, at Denver, home for Arizona, at Atlanta, at Seattle, home for Green Bay. I don't see a path. I don't see a path where Detroit's going to win game number two.
The only way they beat the Packers in the last week of the season, if the Packers take the week off.
That's a good point.
Right?
At Atlanta, maybe?
Maybe. You got that same Seahawks team that maybe they just decide to shut down Russell Wilson because they know they're out of it, and there's a lot of hard decisions in the offseason about what to do with him. I'll say this, though, because the other thing I was thinking about, aside from thinking about the obvious joy of our man Brendan, is when I was thinking about this going, the Lions really got beat from the greatest regular season field goal in the history of the NFL. They tied the Steelers in overtime. They were in a lot of games this year to where there's an argument to be made that they're a better football team than the Houston Texans, regardless of what the record state. If I'm the college football committee, I'm looking at these two, and from the eye test, I might think that I'd rate the Lions higher than the Texans. We just got done talking about they have a better head coach.
They play harder.
Would you argue with me?
They play harder.
They have a better starting quarterback.
Goff's better than Tyrod Taylor. I would agree with that. Or
Davis
Mills.
They have
a better
running back, except he was hurt this last week.
He was hurt. Better running back. Texans probably have better receivers, although St. Brown's a pretty good young player. I think he has a future in the league. I don't think he's better than Cooks right now. But they play harder. Dan Campbell's a better coach. And they have Aaron Glenn, who is the Nimitz
former
grad.
Texan, yep.
So that's A&M. And I'm a homer, so Nimitz grad. I have to give him credit for that. Meanwhile, Sunday Night Football, Kansas City getting by Denver without any problem, 22-9. Chiefs defense looking a lot better. Offense not great. Mahomes just 15-29, 184 yards, no TDs. Threw an interception, and Mahomes admitted after the game, well, he can be better offensively.
Obviously, we feel like we're not playing our best football. We have spurts where we're really good, and then we have spurts where we kind of have these we're not scoring. We're not finding ways to finish drives. So definitely as a competitor, you want to be better. But I think you win football games, you win football games at the end of the day. And so for us, if we keep winning football games, defense keeps playing the way that they're playing. When the offense, we really become who we know we can be, we'll be a hard football team to beat.
Football teams, whenever you win football games, you win football games. Hot take from Pat Mahomes. Not the hottest quarterback in the NFL, though.
I would like Mahomes to start all press conferences with,
hey-ho!
And then I would like him to finish with, waka waka! Because he sounds like a combination of Muppets. That voice, it's hard to take seriously. Look, their defense, I didn't think was that good and was going to be the reason why it was going to hold that team back. Their defense has looked really good lately. That offense that I had every belief that because there's no major injuries or things going on, that they were going to eventually get right, and he's not extending plays anymore, they looked bad last night.
Ocho says that Mahomes sounds like Cody Stutes. Is that accurate? We'll have to do a side-by-side
the phlegm
comp.
Factor, I can understand the phlegm factor, but I don't think that the actual voice tones.
Denver, the Broncos, by the way, they remind me of Texas A&M a little bit. They're a quarterback away from, I think, being a championship contender.
They could be.
Denver's got the pieces. They have a great young running back, Javonte Williams, who looks very good. The receiving core is solid.
Kid went to Carolina, right?
I don't remember.
He's a hell of a workhorse. I believe you. He takes some hits and runs after first contact are really impressive.
So Denver, maybe in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes.
Oh, sure.
If they bring in, if they were to bring in Deshaun Watson, Denver's probably a top 3 to 5 pick in the AFC to get to the Super Bowl.
There
next
is
year.
No doubt they're going to be hot and heavy in the conversations for whatever quarterbacks are available. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, one of those guys, and it doesn't matter which one, could take that team to a very, very high level.
Is David Culley on the verge of a breakdown? 713-780-ESPN if you want to get involved. 713-780-3776. Is David Culley on the verge of a breakdown? Serenity now, insanity later. It's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we talk about the verge of a breakdown, let's talk about the verge of a breakthrough, and a breakthrough that's already here. It's called neo-grafting, and what it really is getting your own hair back and locating it where you don't have any more hair. You would think that you have pattern baldness. There's no answer for it. Just shave it off, go bald, and just own it. Well, no, not anymore, because Doc Linville has the answers. He has the technology. He has everything under one roof, and he's here to do it for you. And for ESPN listeners, he's going to do it with a process that starts with a consultation that normally is $150 for absolutely free. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, and you can schedule that consultation. Ask all the questions. It's your own hair. They take it from the back and the sides where you never go bald, and you always have your thickest amounts of hair, and they replant it where you need the hair. It's almost like in gardening, resodding. It's taking it where you have a ton, putting it where you don't have any, and then after 6 to 9 months of the hair actually getting really firmly established in the scalp and then growing to its fullest development like it was in the back of your head, you're going to see the results. I had it done in late September. I can already see, and all the people that are close to me already see on a daily basis, the progress it continues to make. By June or July, I should be really getting my old hairline back. The success rate is over 95%. It's fantastic. But if you don't believe me, it will cost you nothing to see and hear from them. 975hair.com. Go see my man, Doc Linville. Make that consultation appointment and just ask the questions. It may be for you, and it could be a game changer.
This is ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Something happens to Tyrod, you could see him.
Tyrod's healthy, he's the starter.
He's the starter.
You're looking at Davis Mills, who is committed quarterback for the Houston Texans. This will be his 7th game this season.
I should know.
I do think it's the right choice for David Culley in this game to go to Davis Mills. You know, just based on the lack of passing production that we've seen from this offense in the last two games.
Tyrod had a wrist. He hyperextended his wrist a little bit, and he wasn't sure he could handle the football.
He's been working through it. He is available to go back in the game, but Culley made an audible, and that's why Davis Mills is now in the game.
Tyrod had a wrist. He hyperextended his wrist a little bit, and he wasn't sure he could handle the football.
Is Tyrod still the starter when he's healthy?
Hey, when you don't score any points in a game, you evaluate everything. You know, I just got to look at the, you know, Tyrod through the times that he was in there, and then look at Davis while he was in there, and then just see where we need to go from there.
You ever hyperextended your wrist, pulling the media's leg that way by saying that it was a wrist injury?
I've broken my wrist taking a charge in middle school basketball, but no, I have not hyperextended my wrist doing that with, what'd you say, the media?
Everybody. I mean, he's trying to convince the media the reason why he made the change at quarterback was a hyperextended wrist.
I believe it. I believe
it. The fact they couldn't hyperextend a drive into the Colts territory the whole time he was quarterback.
They didn't do it with Mills either, though.
Awful. Either one of them. But he made a change, and that was his explanation.
Are you buying the injury? Because they've already announced that he's going to be week to week and that Davis Mills is going to start Sunday.
No, I'm buying the fact that they're finally embracing the suck, and they realized, look, okay, fine, enough is enough. We'll make up injuries the rest of the year. He won't play. Davis Mills will finally be the guy, and we'll see what we got.
You know what's interesting, though, about that is, like, they embrace the suck without really trying to embrace the suck. Like, they kind of fell into the embracing the suck method. Both of them were bad yesterday, though, on the 31-0.
But I think
drubbing.
The way they went about this, in their minds, in their meeting rooms privately, they're going, okay, we did it. We convinced them we were actually trying all season. And now, because of the way everything's gone and getting our doors blown off every week and then with injuries and other things, I think everybody firmly believes we're the worst team in football. We don't have to fake it anymore. We're there.
mean, I can't say you're wrong. I mean, they're going to give their best, darn it. They're going to try. They're going to, you know, give the old college try to try to see if they can pick up another victory, although they shouldn't. 2-10. Can't wait till the clock strikes zero on the season. David Culley, like, you can say that he was hired to be Caserio's puppet. Not necessarily the best hire in terms of, like, who deserves the job or at least who can be very good at the job. David Culley's never going to confuse anybody with a quality NFL head coach. But is he starting to lose his mind a little bit? Is he on the verge of a breakdown? Here are a couple of things he had to say during the press conference where you can kind of sense that he's getting a little frustrated, which David Culley usually doesn't get. Here's one where he talked about the game plan. Is this a game plan thing for the Houston Texans getting better?
No, I don't think it's in the game plan. It's not in the game plan. It's us executing. We got to do a better job of coaching them to execute what we're trying to do, and we're not doing a good enough job of doing that right now.
So he says that, look, we can't execute. It's not a game plan thing. We can't execute because we're not doing a good enough job of executing. And look, the Texans are bad in both, in my opinion. I don't believe that they have a good coaching staff. Lovie Smith has impressed me as a defensive coordinator, but even that, like
Pep Hamilton,
maybe. We haven't seen enough of Pep
Hamilton.
He's
not working with anything.
And Pep Hamilton, for as much praise as he gets, dude's had a lot of jobs. He's had a lot of jobs, and usually if you're really good at something, you're not going to be, you know, bouncing around as much, and if you're bouncing around, usually you're going upwards, right? And for all the jobs that he's had, he was an offensive coordinator back in 2013-15 for the Colts, was an assistant head coach with the Cleveland Browns and a quarterback coach. Like, he's bounced around a lot. He's never really been successful as an offensive coordinator. And he's still the quarterback's coach right now for the Texans. So, like, everybody gives Pep Hamilton praise, and he's still very young. And
talking about this coaching staff, though, of guys that
sold on Pep
at least
Hamilton.
Their experience, I think, as a quarterback's coach. I mean,
as a quarterback's coach, for sure.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying. He, in the current position he's in as quarterback's coach, just like the current position, Lovie Smith has failed at the University of Illinois.
Yeah.
Lovie Smith overall had some success as a head coach of the Bears, but he was better as a defensive coordinator. But what he's done with absolutely nothing to work with, I think if there's two coaches that you go, okay, those guys are salvageable, it would be Pep Hamilton as the quarterback's coach and Lovie Smith as the DC.
I would completely agree with that. And I have an opinion that Pep Hamilton is going to be the play caller for this team next season, because certainly Tim Kelly's not going to be. Here's what I was thinking, though, yesterday during the game about the defense. Like, and again, I think Lovie Smith is doing an admirable job. I believe that he's getting more than what his he's getting more out of the players than the players are in quality. You get my point. We talked last week about how the Texans are number 8 in DVOA, which is kind of the advanced metrics of stuff. I feel like that's a little bit of like fuzzy math, though, because the Texans have not been up a lot in games, right? They've been playing from behind a lot. What do opposing teams do whenever they start to take multiple possession leads? They start running the ball, and they start getting very conservative, right? You're not going to rack up tons of yards whenever you're beating teams by 14 points a game. So the fact that the Texans are like, and again, I think they're doing an admirable job. They hang tight in a lot of games, but they get beat down and wore down towards the end. I feel like this number 8 DVOA ranking's more about game script than anything else. Like, if they were in close games and stuff like that, they'd be giving up more yards, and the yards per game is actually not great. The DVOA is. Like, I feel it's a little smoke and mirrors with that defense.
I can understand your point. But I think that from the standpoint of overall, I skip all the advanced metrics and everything like that. We both talked about the fact that Lovie Smith should be commended, because as much as that the final score doesn't show it a lot of times, but it could have been a lot worse if Lovie Smith wasn't your defensive coordinator, regardless of how little the talent level is that he has to work with, to where I think that I'm not trying to anoint them defensively as a good unit or a team that to be reckoned with on the defensive side of the football. I just think to save his job, to say that, look, if there's any kind of bright spots on the coaching staff that warrant a second look, especially because the one thing that we don't know intangible-wise is how much he's helping Culley week to week as a former head coach.
Romeo's on staff, too.
With some of the day-to-day operations and things. I think that Culley needs as much help from guys that have been there, done that he can on his staff. And I think that because the fact he hasn't embarrassed himself as defensive coordinator and at times has shown signs that he really knows what he's doing, Lovie Smith should be back.
I believe everybody's going to be back except for Tim Kelly.
Like, Tim Kelly's absolutely not.
You might have, like, attrition in terms of, like, who's your offensive line coach, things like that. But if you look at the big three, head coach, David Culley, I believe he's going to be back.
Yep.
Because why not? You're not going to be a winning team next year anyways. Lovie Smith has done a fine job, so he'll be back. I don't believe Tim Kelly will be back, because Tim Kelly really was kept around trying to curry favor with Deshaun Watson, and that ship has sailed. And he's been really bad at the job, too. So he's going to be the one of the big three that, in my opinion, goes. But I also feel like they're just going to hire Pep Hamilton from within. Like, you're not in a position to have this, you know, new coaching staff that you really believe in and then feed them with a terrible roster, which is where you start to hear the frustration from David Culley. Here's another one. He was asked what's missing from the offense, and just you can hear the frustration in Culley's voice.
Well, just consistency. We don't have the consistency, you know. Well, we're still having some breakdowns. We're not good enough to be able to play behind the chains when we have formation issues, when we have penalties. And basically, those things put us behind the chains. And when you do that, we got no chance to do that.
I mean, Culley's not going full sail, throwing his team under the bus. But this is very much those last two bites that we played. Our team lacks a lot of talent. Our team's not very good.
Jeremy, here's the thing. I think it always looks good. If you and I were asked to go out to lunch with some people and they said, hey, Jeremy, here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to give you more money than you've ever had at any job and the title you've always wanted to get to just keep doing what you're doing. However, once you do that, you basically sell your soul to us and we can do and say whatever we want. You got to go with it and you got to act like you're 100% on board with it. And you got to act the part on a daily basis. And I don't care if it goes against every one of your personal and private beliefs and everything that you think that has made you who you are to this point. You're getting the money and the title you've always wanted. And I think at the time, David Culley got all of that and went, I'm in. This is awesome. And told his wife, we finally made it, honey. And then got to like this week in the season and went, oh, my God. At the end of the day, my reputation means something. My name was, you know, spotless up until I took this job. Now I'm the laughing stock of the NFL when most coaches would love to have me on their staff. And the reason why is I got to do this every single week and try to make you believe, as badly as he gets the job done, try to convince you that we really have a plan, that we're really focused on winning, and these are the only little things. We correct these things, we're going to be just fine. No, you're not, and now you are showing signs that you're not just fine as a person trying to do what they want you to do.
713-780-3776. Eric the Dog Walker saying, Jeremy, I disagree with your premise that the head coach doesn't matter. Culley's doing more harm than good. He also texted earlier and said Culley has to go now. I get that, like, in terms of the short term, that a head coach is going to have significance in a football game. Like, if Bill Belichick was the coach of this team, are you much better than 2-10? No, you're not much better than 2-10. Maybe you're like 3-9, something along those lines. I don't believe that David Culley is going to impact the long term growth of this organization by being the head coach even until next year. I believe next year will be his final year as the head coach of the Houston Texans. Is he stunting the growth of any players? I don't think that you have any players that you're really worried about stunting the growth of. Now, you will next year because you're going to have at least one first-round draft pick, maybe more, depending on if you trade down, depending if you can trade Deshaun Watson. That's why you need good coordinators in place. Like, Culley's not going to be responsible for the growth and development of rookies. That's going to be your position coaches. That's going to be Lovie Smith. That's going to be whoever your offensive coordinator is. Now, is David Culley embarrassing himself and then embarrassing, like, who you cheer for on Sundays being the Houston Texans? Yeah, he's not a good head coach, but I also don't feel like they're going to get rid of him after 1 year.
No, he's not going anywhere. And we've said this because of the fact that as much as we say, look, the easiest way to put it in perspective for fans is the head coach is the CEO. So you're not supposed to be on a play-by-play basis affecting the offense and the defense. Now, some guys, because they're really good at it, they end up taking play-calling duties on one side of the ball or the other, or some guys are just power-hungry like Bill O'Brien. But here's the thing. For the first couple of years, you're more apt to being a head coach if you have, you know, HR issues, you know, delegation issues, you know how to delegate, you know how to empower people, you know how to motivate people, and you know how when the time does come to make a decision, you can make a tough decision regardless of how you may look or how you may feel coming out of it. But overall, there's always more onus put on the offensive and defensive coordinators because they're on every single play, every down, and every practice. That's why you bring in a couple of kids in the draft. Well, I feel very confident that those kids getting their first taste of NFL life and coaching from Lovie Smith, that I'm putting them in good hands to be good pros and learn the game on a professional level. Offensively, he's got to make the same kind of hire. And whether Caserio butts in and says, that's all me, they do it in combination, or if he gets to make the hire, someone better be that OC that has experience that can at least nurture and develop the kids that they're going to get.
We both know who's making that hire.
It's Nick Caserio.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Is this the low point for the Houston Texans franchise? 713-780-3776 if you want to weigh in. Also, one team, awful, Houston Texans. The other team that we thought was awful, the Rockets. They're red hot. That and more next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.